Do you have trouble keeping things organized? Do you have trouble keeping things neat? Is that a psychological problem? How can that really interfere in the rest of your life? Those are some of the things we're going to cover today here on Delaware 105.9, where we have online with us Regina Lark is here, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about that. She is the founder and president of A Clear Path, a professional organizing for home, work, and life. And boy, your credentials are just through the roof here. I'll read some of them at the end of the interview because I want to get right to it. But there is a ton of stuff, including this is the one I think people will be most impressed by. Featured on A&E's Hoarders, right? Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, Small Business Blog, other major media outlets. Written some a couple of books on this on the problem, if you want to call that. So, like I said, credentials are through the roof. I will get to the whole list in the bio after the interview. But I'm having trouble being organized for this, so I don't know where to start, Regina. So talk to me a little bit about you're a professional organizer. We're going to get into some of how this is applicable to people's lives, but what does a professional organizer do?
Well, that is a great start to this interview. A professional organizer is a person who will come in to a residential or corporate space. And if your corporate space is at home, if you're a home-based business, we go there too. And basically, we are brought in to help people make sense of their environment. Some people are plagued with terrible, terrible clutter. Some people don't have clutter, but they need systems in order to help them move forward in their life. A bill-paying system. How do you keep track of your email system?
Wow.
A lot of our clients will be, they're under a lot of medical care, so they need a system for matching their doctor bills with their insurance payments and making sure that those things line up correctly. So basically, we are needed in every area of human life from birth to death.
The big question, and you're talking to me because I was joking about not being organized. I'm organized with questions, but boy, otherwise in life, since I was a little kid, you know, I was unorganized. Do people stick with it, Regina, after you guys come in? Do they stick with it?
Well, you know, here's what's going on. May I ask you a question?
Okay.
So you said that you've been feeling disorganized all your life.
Oh, sure. I remember when I was a little boy. I mean, there was a story where my mom locked me out of my bedroom and I was no longer able to have bedroom privileges until you prove you can keep it clean. So it wasn't bad. I had to sleep on the couch. You know, it wasn't bad. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep it clean, even though that means I couldn't play with my toys and all that. I wasn't able. Another one. Regina, my heart's still broken over this. I wanted these penguin curtains when I was a little boy, penguin curtains. And she said, yeah, if you keep your room clean, we'll get them. Put them on down payment at Kmart. And as long as I kept my room clean for 3 months, I got another penguin. Guess what? Never got the penguins. So yeah, I've been having that problem for my entire life. Sure.
I'm going to go to Target and I'm going to buy you your own penguin curtains after we talk.
I've been looking.
Okay. So my next question to you, if somebody were to come over to your place and just do an amazing job getting everything decluttered and setting it up so that it's a beautiful, chaos-free, uncluttered space, and it's your space, do you think you'd be able to keep that up?
My first initial reaction to that is, well, no, they wouldn't be allowed over. They can't see it the way it looks. I don't allow them in.
Okay. Well, I'm grateful that there are some very, very brave souls that will let us in, because really that's a reaction from most people.
Sure.
And where I come from is simply this. We are products of our brain and we are products of our environment. And most people who have been plagued with a lot of clutter their whole lives are generally operating with a brain type that is probably very right brain dominant. They're creative. They probably are very social. I mean, look, you have a radio show. I mean, I'm wondering, would you consider yourself a very social person? You probably really enjoy people. you probably really hate hanging up your clothes.
I hate both of those things. I just I like people.
You're in the wrong business.
Nah, I like people from a distance. I mean, I like talking to people like this, but like in real life social situations, there's a reason why I'm on radio, so I can hide in a box.
Got
you know?
It.
Yeah, but no, I mean, yeah, I like talking to people
but
in this regard.
To your artistic, your creative artistic side.
You got it.
And a lot of people with clutter have that artistic creative side, and they don't have the bandwidth. They don't see the way to keep their spaces cleared. And so one of the ways in which I've developed and grown as a professional organizer is I came to recognize that so many people will call us to just, they're so angry and frustrated and feeling chaotic about the clutter. We go in and we can make the place look like a centerfold of good housekeeping. But what the person is left with is a whole lot of really bad habits and behaviors.
Right.
And even though the clutter is clear, because they did not, either the organizer that they're working with or the family member didn't recognize that in order to maintain this, not only does the change need to happen physically, but we need to start looking at the changes that have to happen internally. So one of the strategies I'm using now is I'm asking my clients, look, pretend you're a helicopter pilot. Hover over yourself for a few days. Take note of exactly what you're doing in your space. Why do you have clutter? When your mail comes in, where does it go? Do you have a place for it? Is there a home for everything in your home?
No.
You know, and to really start to get a handle on what are the habits that you're engaged in that will probably have to change once the clutter is gone if they want to maintain it.
I got to imagine that getting rid of stuff, though, that's got to be really hard for people, though, right?
It is hard for people. I've noticed that there are folks out there that they have their hand behind them and they're holding on to things that brought them pleasure and that they treasure and that these were dishes from their grandmother and how can I give this up? And these are the musketeer ears that I got right when the theme park opened in 1958.
I got 12
and
of them.
So pick out the best pair and let go of the rest. And so, and we have this desire to stay connected with our past because it did on so many levels bring us joy. We also, for good or ill, have our hands way out in front of us. We're holding on to that which we may need someday.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've recognized is that when folks have their hand behind them holding on to these memories from the past, and they have their hand in front of them holding on to what is an uncertain future, they're allowing the past and the future sort of trump their sense of comfort in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And so the letting go is imperative to creating a sense of comfort in the present. So some of the strategies we use is to look at these items in terms of how they serve your higher purpose, your higher good. I know that we have many artifacts from the past, grandma's dishes being a prime example. And I always ask, well, what's so special about these dishes? Because after all, everybody had to have dishes.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like everybody ate off of something, whether it was a styrofoam plate or fine china. Everybody ate off of something from years ago. What makes these dishes special? Well, they were grandma's, okay. Well, do they have a purpose in your life today? Well, no, I keep moving them to get to the soup tureen in the back. What, you know, whatever it is. And so a lot of the letting go means asking a lot of questions, drilling down to get to the root of how can we let this go? Because not letting go will maintain your clutter. And if you're looking to live a less cluttered life, you know, 1 - 1 is going to equal 0. And so coming to terms with how these things manifest in your life and what their true meaning is.
Is there a certain type of person that is more likely to be cluttered? Is it, like you said, the creative type, right brain types, or those are the type that are more likely to be, or is this something that, because I'll give you a quick story. My wife just went over a friend of ours' house for the first time. I'd never been there. She came home from the house and she said, "You will not believe this place. It is so quiet and it is so calm and it is so peaceful." Mm-hmm. Gets back to our house and we're proverbially in a state of, we're moving. Oh, well, we're going to move soon, so this needs to stay packed up. Uh-huh. We're going to move here. We still have stuff. Right. I still have stuff that's unpacked from when I lived with my parents 15 years ago.
Right. Right. I have to say, I see this all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, holding on to the things that we may need someday, i.e. a move.
Yeah. Yes.
At some point, you have to come to terms with, will you or won't you? Will this serve your next space? Is this something that you can replace later on down the road should you get a house where this will actually fit into?
Uh-huh.
You know, people are holding on to children's clothing and their kids are 50.
Right.
You know, and, right. You know, there's I was in a space not too long ago and, she was holding on to the baby clothes, and her kids are in their 20s, and she's holding on to their baby clothes, and she thinks the clothes will be very useful to her future grandchildren. And so here we have a woman in her early 50s whose kids are now in college, who are not in a committed relationship, and who aren't pregnant.
Right.
And she's holding on to an event that may or may not happen.
Right, right, right.
And so it's all kinds of people that are holding on. But I would say that a lot of cluttered people are going to come from either very creative pursuits, or they're going to have grown up in chaos and disorder. I've worked with a lot of families who grew up in hoarding households. And quite literally, they were never taught the principles of organizing, like everything in your home needs a home.
Uh-huh.
And you really should make your bed every morning and try to get the dishes done every night. These principles of organizing, not rules per se, but basic principles for how to keep your space as calm as you can.
So what would you call examples of hoarding? I'll give you an example. You said growing up in a household that hoarded. My dad has in his basement, I love your story about the baby clothes because it's the same thing. He has in his basement big buckets full of doorknobs. A couple of big buckets, and they weigh like 300 pounds to lift them up. Hey, Dad, why do you have those buckets full of doorknobs? Well, I might need them someday. Yeah. And it's been, I mean, you know, he's lived in Delaware for 30 years. They were from his move from Pennsylvania, and he's never needed them. He's never gone in those buckets.
And the house is filled with pocket doors.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, but how do you know what is something can you never be sentimental? Can you not keep any of those things? Old birthday cards, old doorknobs, buckets. What do you know not to be sentimental about?
Of course. You could be sentimental about everything, but you want to start asking the hard questions if your sentiment means that you're walking around in clutter. You know, it's either decide to not be in clutter and see what you can do to help yourself or bring in help to get you to move along with your decision or live with the clutter. Something's going to have to shift. If you don't want to feel out of control, something's going to have to shift. If it means that you have to let go of some sentimental things, then you ask yourself a lot of questions so that you can create thoughtful responses to this. So greeting cards. I worked with a woman and we were sitting on the floor of the living room, and we were surrounded by hundreds of greeting cards that her three sisters and five children had given her over the years. A card for every single occasion and then just because. So we're looking at all of these cards, and I was pretty new in my organizing business. I said, okay, well, let's just let these go. And she stopped and she got angry. She says, Regina, my sisters, they think of me. They go to the store, they buy the card, they bring it home, they sign it, they address it, they stamp it, they mail it. And you're telling me that now I should just throw it away?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Rosemary, did you read it? Yes. Is there anything that she wrote here that's any different than anything she's written in the past? Every card we came up to with her sister was Love, Teresa. So it's not as if Teresa wrote these amazing sentiments. What Teresa was doing was acknowledging a moment in time, your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the card giver seriously expect the card receiver to hold on to the card for the rest of its or their natural life. So asking questions about what is the purpose of this in my life will help you to move through this clutter.
Let me ask you a question. I'm getting the question online. What about the people? This is nice, though. It's helping people. What about the people who don't want to be part of a lot of things, who don't want to part with a lot of things because they cost so much money, or they think it'll be worth money in the future?
Right. Okay. So when I hear somebody say, well, I paid a lot of money for this, I can't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is, so you believe that the retail price that you paid was absolutely on the dime worth it? Right?
Good question.
Nobody has jacked up their prices. The second question, do you believe that what you paid for it, the same value is still there even though you've had it for 10 years? Chances are not really.
Right.
If this has a monetary value that you can sell right now, let's go on eBay right now to see what something similar is being listed for.
Mm-hmm.
And if the listing is hot, if it looks great, if it appears that, wow, I am so glad I held on to this because I'm going to put it online right now, or it looks like it's just going to increase in value, I'm going to hold on to it. But having all of this information will really, really help you.
So know what you have then.
Exactly.
You know what you're making
me
think of? If
you really believe it's going to be worth something, do a little bit of research and get and acquire the knowledge to help you make a much more informed decision.
How many people have you run into that have had a problem with Beanie Babies? They collected all these Beanie Babies because they thought
everybody.
They'd be everybody. They thought they'd be worth something, and now they're like a dollar at Goodwill.
Oh, it's Beanie Babies, it's Hummels, it's now, match cars will have value. Any type of Disney memorabilia will have value.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I see out there? Comic book collections, but comic book collections that are still in the original packaging.
Right.
A lot of stuff will have value if you still have it in the original packaging, but most people tear into packaging, goes by the by.
Yeah, that can really clutter up your. My wife and I, we're Disney collectors, so that's what mostly is in our house. It's Disney stuff, and since I'm in radio, CDs, Disney and CDs, Disney and CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's been computers, I've made the switch about 4 years ago when she moved in to put all my CDs in boxes and put them away and just put them on the computer. So I still have them and I still buy them, but I put them away, so at least they're out of sight. The Disney stuff. Let's move on. Now listen.
Come on, now let's talk about your Disney stuff.
You said that there's a psychological connection between clutter and shame. Do most people they feel ashamed like I said before, wouldn't let somebody over?
Mm-hmm. What I've noticed is shame is often gendered.
Hmm.
So my male clients with a lot of clutter, a lot of them will say, oh God, just get it out of here.
Uh-huh.
A lot of my female clients will say, I'm so embarrassed by this. I'm ashamed for you to see this. When my female clients, the clutter has, what's the word I'm looking for? It's as if they are a direct extension of the clutter. That there's something wrong with them, therefore they have clutter. With my male clients, the clutter is not an extension of who they are. They just, I'm just disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take it on. They don't make it personal. Women tend to make the clutter personal. And I think that has a lot to do with how females are socialized from girls into women. And we still have this mentality that it's the female's primary responsibility to take care of the home. As if, because she's female, this is just innately part of her natural abilities. But if you look at what it takes to run a well-functioning home, you need good time management skills, you need good spatial skills, you need good shopping skills and all of that. You need to be able to see where things are going to live once they come into the house. If you're a right brain creative, you're going to fail miserably at this job. And this is a job that has the longest job description in history, 24/7, unwaged.
Mm-hmm.
So women more than men tend to take on the clutter in a very personal way, which I think is just a product of how we socialize females and males.
That's pretty enlightening, actually, to think of it that way, because you're right. I mean, on my end, well, you know, for the most part, we'll just throw stuff away or just don't buy it. That's the next part. You're talking about making purchases. What do you have to ask yourself before you make a purchase? Because I found whenever we started running out of room for things, you know, I'm just of that mindset. Well, we just won't buy it. We don't go to the store. We don't go shopping, because if we're not using the things we have, why buy more? What do you think? What do you ask yourself before you make a purchase?
I think first I need to say that I think how you look at that idea of shopping. Well, we don't have room for it. We're not using what we have. Let's not shop.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are excellent observations. Most people don't do that. Just recently, I've been working with a lot of people with a lot of shopping issues. And I think shopping, I'll step back a second. I am not a psychologist. I'm an observer of human behavior.
Right.
But I think a lot of people will shop because of anxiety, loneliness, depression. They're not in the right relationship. They have a lousy job. There's something that's troubling. And so they shop because in that moment they feel good. If shopping is a problem, and if there's no anxiety, no depression, no loneliness or sadness, and you're still shopping, and the shopping is impairing the quality of your life on some level, I walk into homes all the time where there are clothing racks in the living room with clothes hanging on them that still have tags on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the clothing rack is in the living room because the bedrooms are filled. The closets in the bedrooms are filled. So I made up these little cards. I've got these laminated cards that people put in their wallet in front of their credit card. And it's got an image of a hand. Stop. And the speak to the hand. And the questions next to the hand read, do I need it? Will it serve my heart or mind? Will it bring me joy? Does it cost too much? Where will it live in my home? If we can just have a definitive answer to one or more of these questions, we will begin to make thoughtful purchases. But we don't ask questions about our stuff. We don't ask questions about what we need, use, or desire. We don't even ask the question, what does it mean to have enough?
That that's got to hurt you, I mean, economically, too, you know, to just keep on... Right. I mean, what do you think? If somebody has a problem hoarding things or bringing more things in, what kind of effect does that have on their wallet?
Well, I think it can have. Well, it will have a negative impact on the wallet. So many people have multiple cans of Comet and socks and underwear. They have multiples of everything.
Yeah.
Because their places are so crowded, they can't find anything. And wrapping paper and bows and tape and everything imaginable, people have multiples of. So right there, with that many items taking up all kinds of space, and that many items couldn't possibly all live together, then of course it's going to impact your wallet. I'm telling people, bury the Costco card. Get the shopping and the spending and the acquiring under control. It's not as if most people in the United States live in the Adirondacks where there aren't, I mean, I live in LA County and there's a shopping mall or a strip mall, sometimes three of them within 2 miles. So it's not like we're starving for stuff. So it does have an economic impact, but I think it also has an emotional impact. It will absolutely affect interpersonal relationships. Because if you're in a partnership with your intimate partner, and one is a shopper and one isn't, that's surely going to have an impact on your relationship, let alone your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only affecting the external part of your life, but I believe it will affect the internal part. And, you know, what's the price tag you put on shame and anxiety? And, you know, what are those costs? Well, you can figure, you know, a good therapist is $150 an hour, so maybe you can monetize it that way.
Oh,
but,
man. Well, let me talk about, I got a couple things coming out of that last point. The Costco example for buying multiples of one thing. I mean, that stuff goes to waste, though, too. Do you think that if you've got a hoarding sort of mentality, do most people do the same thing at the grocery store? They buy 10 cans of something because it's on sale when they only really need one. It just didn't happen to us. We were buying, I can't remember what it was, like a can of soup. And my wife grabs two cans of soup. And I said, what do you need both cans for? And she says, oh, I guess I don't need both, and puts the other one back, you know, something like that. So you tell me, do they have the same kind of tendencies whenever they're, you know, shopping for other things, to groceries and things like that?
Sure. You know, there's this, people with hoarding disorders are, it's mental illness. And in fact, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the fifth edition, came out in May of 2013, and hoarding is now its own disorder in that handbook for mental health professionals. So someone with a hoarding disorder will rationalize their dumpster diving, their trips to the 99-cent store, or their trips to Macy's or Ralph's with a belief that they need it, they know somebody who needs it, it's on sale. And what happens in a hoarding situation is the person with the hoarding behavior, they don't see, literally, they don't see what I see. So I could be in a very crowded, what we call, I could be in the most packed house. We call it, there's a clutter hoarding scale in my profession. And the scale is 1 through 5, and 5 is the packed house coming out of the rafters. And I can be in that space, and I will say to the client, do you see any trash here?
No.
And they will look around, and they say, well, that cup is probably trash.
Oh, come on.
So, but that's mental illness. And you have to meet them where they live.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3 to 5% of the population, which is a lot of people.
That many?
Yes. A lot of other people have what's called chronic disorganization. And chronic disorganization is is different. The letting go of the things may not cause the kind of trauma that somebody with a hoarding disorder is trying to let go of. But let me get back to your original question. So when people with hoarding disorders, it's just a very different way of looking at how they acquire and how they live in these environments. But to your point about buying more than you need, mm-hmm. at some point, I encourage people to develop the mantra, a sale is no bargain if it's causing clutter. We tend to think that buying 10 of these is good, but we're only eating one can of peaches every couple of months. And yet, we have 9 cans of peaches sitting on the... I mean, it's at some point, you have to stop and say, how is this serving me? What kind of deal is this if I can't even find the Cheerios? And I eat Cheerios every day.
It was peas, actually, what it was. My wife, she bought 2 cans of pea. And why are you buying 2? I don't know. What's up?
Well, I know. And the stores do this, too. Buy one, get one free.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I blame the marketers. I blame the entities that are trying to entice us into purchasing more than we need. Any book on marketing, I've read several books on sales and marketing and how storerooms and showrooms and the space between the time you get into a checkout line to the time you actually get to the clerk, all the things that are there for you to purchase. It's stunning, and they're deliberately created. These areas of consumables are deliberately created so that you just reach over and grab it without even thinking. And so we are enticed into believing that more is better, that a sale is a bargain, and that we should be able to have whatever it is that we want.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I really want to see people just take stock of their environment and see, look around, what is serving you here? What uplifts and elevates your heart? What feeds you intellectually or emotionally? I mean, really feeds you. When you come to an item that says, I don't know why I have it, develop a knowing. Drill down. Ask better questions.
When you talk about the marketing angle of it, we were talking about the Disney stuff before. Oh, they're the worst, though, because they create scarcity with all their items. You know, it's on sale for, it goes back in the Disney vault, so you got to buy it now. You know, we only have this for a short amount of time. And psychologically, you think, I got to buy it now or I won't be able to get it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So speaking of multiple items and collections, all that, what are some of the items that people have the most problem with? It's the one that I see a lot, or people that I know a lot, and maybe we included books. Too many books. We keep every book. Once we read it, it stays on the shelf. Are we going to read it again? Probably not, but it stays on the shelf. What are some of the items that you see that people just, you know, they don't need, but they hang on to the most?
Books, clothes, shoes, picture frames.
Picture frames.
Top of my list.
Picture frames. That's an interesting one, really.
Well, look at all the pictures they're holding on to, and they think they're going to develop them. They're going to get them in the frames, and they're going to have a montage of family photographs on the entire wall.
Yeah.
And because a lot of people with clutter also have lousy time management skills, they're not building into their schedule the time to fill the empty picture frames. Books, absolutely. We are a nation of bibliophiles. I come from the premise that books were written to be read. If we're not reading them, let them go get read someplace else and become better friends with your library card. I'll tell you a personal story. I had earned a PhD in history, and my home office, when I was a graduate student, 5 floor-to-ceiling bookcases filled with my books Yes, they were alphabetized. Yes, they were alphabetized by genre. And yes, I had read them all.
Mm-hmm.
I was a resource. People knew me by my books. If another grad student needed a book and didn't want to wait to get it through the interlibrary loan system, they'd come to me. Regina, do you have this? I was a resource. I had the classics. And when I was finished with my degree, a couple of years later, it was time to downsize and I had to move. I was selling my house. I was moving into a one-bedroom apartment, and I don't believe in storage for myself. So I had these books and these bookcases, and I had a moment of crisis. It was, what do these books really mean to me? What do they signify? Who am I with them? And who do I think I'm going to be without them? And I had some very, very hard moments because I had invested so much of my resources, but also ego and pride. And these were the books that allowed me to get the PhD behind my name. I mean, I imbued them with such greatness and importance. And they were also really great books.
Right, right.
So what did I do? I put an ad on Craigslist. A smart young graduate student from a local university came by. Her fields of study were my fields of study, and I loaded her car till the tires were practically flat. I waved her on. This young scholar has just amassed the best library she could possibly start out with.
Uh-huh.
I was downsized, and at the end of the day, I was still just as smart as I was before I let go of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I was clearly lighter. And the five books that I actually held on to still remain on my bookshelf. And I did become a really good friend with my library card. And I have not missed a single book because anything that I have thought of since then that I may need, I was able to find.
That's a good point, because I was reluctant to accept that until you said you were able to then find if you needed the information. Because I'll give you an example. I was just recently looking for a book on music theory that I had, and then a book on music theory that I wrote. I can't find either of them, and mm-hmm. I'm tearing apart the house looking for. I have no idea where they are. And I come to think, I don't even know if I brought that with me when I moved. And,
mm-hmm.
That's one fear I think that I've got that. Maybe I will need to find this information, but look, with music, there's nothing new under the sun. I can go online and find the information if I want to. It's available out there.
Sure. You know, and what you say is really important because I joke with people saying my needs are always met,
uh-huh.
but I have a feeling it's because I've learned to be flexible on how they can be met. There's not one way to meet my needs. There's a variety of ways. So if I can't find a particular book that I thought was earth-shaking and groundbreaking, I have to find a way to assuage my sense of anxiety with knowing that there are other things that will serve just as well. It doesn't have to be perfect. And a lot of people with right brain, a lot of folks, I work with a lot of people with ADHD. And one of the hallmarks I've seen of people with ADHD, they suffer from the twin plagues of perfectionism and procrastination. And they will procrastinate to the point that they don't get projects completed, or they want to amass every single thing they believe they need for the project in order to move forward on the project. Everything has to be perfect in order for the project to come forward. And if you can allow 80% to be good enough, if you can allow just start, then I think a lot of people will have more opportunity to fulfill their goals and plans to move forward.
Let me give you an example of that. My wife's here, by the way, and she's laughing because I know what she's thinking of. In addition to radio, I play music too. And about 6 months ago, I decided I'm going to do an album of all traditional songs that were written before 1910. And how many songs do you need on an album? 10, 12?
Yeah.
I haven't started the album yet because I'm still, I've amassed 160 songs.
Right.
And I haven't started yet because right. I'm, well, no, I need a new guitar before I start. I got the guitar. Now the guitar needs fixed and then I need a new microphone.
Right.
Oh, man. You're, so, hey, I want to talk to you before we run out of time. Time, you mentioned both in this last part, time management, okay? And then you mentioned even things from cluttered email way back when we first started talking. Mm-hmm. So this stuff can really have an impact in your life besides just like a messy house, messy life. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I see that a lot. I don't know if that's the hard and fast rule, but I do see that a lot. My book, Psychic Debris, Crowded Closet, the relationship between the stuff in your head and what's under your bed, speaks to that.
Does it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that I've always had a problem with time management too. Back at my old job before I worked at this radio station, I remember every day coming to work. And I worked there for about 10 years, and I thought to myself, "Today's I really got to get my stuff together. Today's the day I'm going to make sure I get there an hour early instead of 15 mm-hmm. minutes late. I'm going to make sure that I give myself enough time." And every day it was like that. Every day it was, I'm going to give myself enough time. So mm-hmm. I think time management is something that we all kind of, we struggle with as well. This is probably mm-hmm. a good place to plug the book, though. Psychic Debris and Crowded Closets. Is that available all over? I know that your website is a clearpath.net, and there'll be a link to it on my Facebook page and the blog as mm-hmm. well. Where would you recommend people go then for help? They're hearing us talk. They've got a lot of good tips right now. Would the book be a good idea? Go to the website. What do you think?
I think all of the above, depending on, you know, some people can't read a book just because they don't have the concentration. I'm thinking of actually making it a book on tape, but the book will help. It's short. It's like a workbook, a journal. You can get it on Amazon and Kindle. What else? If you've got a lot of clutter and you just don't know where to start, go to the National Association of Professional Organizers, NAPO.net, and look for an organizer in your community. Have somebody just come in and give you a consult just to give you a strategy for moving forward. They can email me for any kind of tips. If they come up in their community, if they learn the name of an organizer, and because I'm very well networked in our professional association, then, you know, run it by me. My email is regina@aclearpath.net, or you can find me on my website. Let me be a resource to you. On my website, I have the equivalent of about 12 or 13 pages of where to recycle and donate everything under the sun, from wine corks to kids' DVDs.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at the stuffed animal page. and that's another thing we don't want to talk about. But on this picture here, stuffed animals for emergencies, how many do we have? We've got the one the kid's holding. We've got the one that, and we got like several of these. Okay, so before we run out of time, give me just one or two, a couple of tips, maybe for people that, you know, where do you start? If you know this is an issue beyond getting help, like every little step is you know, makes a difference. Give us some wisdom. One tip for people that are listening right now.
If you have a lot of clutter, plan the clearing over a year. Put it on the calendar. Make a decision that once a week, 3 hours a week, that you're going to tackle one area, a drawer, a shelf. If you got a stuffed garage, give it a day. But make a commitment to your desire for cleared space, and then do everything you can to help yourself get to that goal.
Regina, I appreciate the time today. I've really enjoyed it. As you can tell, it's something that we've thought a lot about. So I love whenever we do these interviews, and it's something that not only we can relate to, but we can just converse like one-on-one. It's awesome. Thank you so much for the time.
Well, thank you, and it was a pleasure being with you today.
All right. Good talking to you. Regina Lark, what do you think? You think that you need to declutter a little bit? I'm going to be honest with you. When I first heard, hey, you want to talk to a professional organizer, I'm like, oh, come on. What practical application is this going to have? Now I don't want to talk about it. Regina Lark, I told her, I did tell her, and oddly enough, I am extremely organized on the air, which is like the one place I'm organized. But I never forget a thing on the air. Everything else in my life, maybe not. Regina Lark, PhD, founder and president of Clear Path Professional Organizing and Home Work Life. As a board-certified professional organizer, she specializes in working with people with chronic disorganization, ADHD, and hoarding disorders, as well as folks who have just way too much stuff. She's a nationally recognized speaker and trainer on issues ranging from organizing to hoarding to time management. She's the author of the book Psychic Debris and Crowded Closets, which was released in February of 2013. She's been featured on A&E's Hoarders, The Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, The Small Business Blog, and other major media outlets. And now with us, for more information on Regina Lark, visit aclearpath.net. No, we don't. My wife says we have some work to do. No, we don't. Oh, we just need a bigger house. This is Delaware 105.9.